This is the Hard Shoulder. Kieran Cuddihy with you until 7 o'clock. I'm sure you would have seen that headline figure published earlier. The rate of inflation rising to 9.1% here in June of this year. The fastest or the highest rate it has been, I should say, in 38 long years. Well, Jim Power, the economist, joins me. Jim, I want to kind of go back in time with you to 1984 in just a moment. But first of all, in terms of that headline figure, it is shocking, but it was to be expected. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. Since March, Kieran, we've seen, obviously, with the Ukraine war situation exacerbating pre-existing problems as a result of COVID, supply chain difficulties, and what has turned out to be a potentially temporary or transitionary inflation phase is now turning into something more permanent. I think it's been clear for some time that, okay, energy and everything related to energy was going to lead the initial charge, but it's now starting to feed into food prices. We get a food price inflation rate of 6.8% and bread prices up by over 11%, pasta up over 12%. And that too reflects a lot of what's going on in Ukraine with the shock to fertilizer prices, but also the shock to wheat production and the exports of wheat. So it's now starting to become more deeply ingrained in the system, and we're starting to see it spread. So it's starting to become a real problem. As you say, a headline rate of 9.1%. I've been saying since March it was likely to top 10%, and it's certainly clearly going in that direction at the moment.
When you talk about some of the foodstuffs there and some of the issues around grain and the Ukraine harvest, I mean, from a societal point of view, is that the real concern, that you see food price inflation kind of catching up on some of the energy inflation rates we've seen?
Yeah, I mean, energy was always going to be politically difficult, but I think food will bring it on to a whole new level of difficulty, because food is probably, well, it is emotionally and socially a hell of a lot more important than energy. So, everything we see is pointing in an upward direction. If you look at the input costs for agriculture production, for example, energy and fertilizer costs, labor costs are rising dramatically. So the cost of producing food is going up. So that's a huge problem. And it's feeding up the supply chain. But there's also a huge global issue with food now, because obviously the Ukraine war has had a huge impact on fertilizer prices and availability, on wheat, on sunflower oil. So it's created a serious crisis. But at the same time, we're clearly getting more extreme weather events. So in other words, I think climate change is starting to have a significant impact on food production. And a few weeks back, the FAO, that's the Food and Agricultural Organization, which is part of the United Nations, was warning that over the next 12 months that 800 to 900 million people globally could be facing food shortages. So the food thing, I think, has always been a bigger concern than energy, and it's now starting to become a real issue. And I suppose from an Irish perspective, we produce a lot of food, and okay, we do import some foodstuffs, but we export a hell of a lot more food than we import. So we're slightly insulated, but even so, the cost of producing that food here is rising dramatically. So that's the problem.
And I'm looking at protests from Sri Lanka literally right now on my TV screen here in studio, and a lot of those protests began because of food price inflation, the Arab Spring, food price inflation. There's a long list of historical events and popular uprising and popular protest being fermenting because of food price inflation. It is much more serious. Listeners already, after getting in touch, Jim, can you please ask, Jim, we all know this is happening. We all can feel it. When will it actually end?
Well, you just wouldn't be terribly optimistic at the moment, because all of those forces driving food price inflation, they don't look like dissipating anytime soon. Okay, so I think we're going to see a lot more food price inflation in the system. On the energy side, I think one of the biggest risks now later in the year is not just the price of energy, but it's the availability of energy. And we've seen warnings about the possibility of rationing natural gas, for example. And I remember doing a news talk interview, I'd say about 3 months ago, where I was sort of suggesting that it wouldn't be beyond the bounds of reality, to see queuing for fuel at the petrol pumps in this country again, as some of us who remember the 70s and the early 80s might remember. And I was laughed at the time, saying that, you know, Ireland doesn't have, we don't import energy directly from Russia, so we're not going to be affected. Of course, the reality is that, okay, we don't import very much in the way of energy, if anything, from Russia, but it's a global energy market. And if, you know, Russian energy supply into Europe and other markets is seriously discommoded, obviously it's going to affect global markets, which feeds through to us. And indeed, the British government was suggesting a couple of weeks back, at least Boris was, that there's a possibility that one of the first things the UK would do in the event of gas shortages would be to cut off Europe or the European Union. So in answer to that listener's question, you'd have to be deeply concerned at the moment that a lot of these pressures will continue to feed through. I would have to say there are some global indicators pointing in a downward direction. You know, shipping costs, for example, are coming down. Mm-hmm. And indeed, energy costs are off the highs. But I still think that there's just a momentum building up at the moment. And I think what needs to happen is for the Ukraine war to end and for global energy supply to resume normality. And okay, it's going to take longer for the food thing to be addressed, because with war going on, you know, there's doubt about how much wheat actually has been sown in this harvest, and so as a consequence of that, there could be a problem later. And likewise with rice production, because of the dramatic increase in fertilizer, mainly poor lower income countries who depend on and produce rice have cut back on fertilizer use. That's going to impact on the yield from the rice crop, I would think, in the next 12 months. So the food situation would take longer to sort out. But if the war ended in the morning, I think you would see energy costs falling significantly.
So if we look back then to the early 80s, 84, the last time inflation was as high as it is now, I mean, were any of the circumstances the same? Or maybe this is a better question. What was the reaction at the time, the government reaction to that? And are there lessons to be learned on that front?
Okay, and before I answer that, Kieran, I think it's worth pointing out, okay, I think people would be aware of it, but what's happening in Ireland is not unique. You know, inflation everywhere is at pretty dramatic levels. And Estonia today, 22%, for example, the Eurozone, 8.6%. So it's a global phenomenon, as it was back in the 70s and the 80s. And the cause of the hyperinflation we saw in the early 80s, and indeed a little bit in the 70s, was for similar reasons. War in 73 and 79, we had two Middle Eastern wars, which seriously disrupted global oil supply. And even at that stage, the world economy was much more dependent on oil than it is today. So we saw a surge in global inflation. Different countries reacted in different ways. Paul Volcker, who's the chairman of the US Federal Reserve at the time, took a zero tolerance approach to inflation. He hiked interest rates dramatically, pushed the US economy into serious recession, and eventually brought inflation under control. Whereas here in Ireland, we adopted a totally different attitude. We tried to spend our way out of the problem. And if you look at, you know, what happened after 1977, particularly over the following years, we saw a massive surge in government spending, basically, as I say, trying to spend our way out of an inflation problem. And of course, that made the problem worse. And it also fed into a serious wage price spiral. So trade union power was very strong at the time here in this country. And we saw an escalation in wage demands across the economy. And that just created this vicious wage price spiral that eventually culminated in the virtual bankruptcy of the economy around 1986. And then in 1987, we had the election of the Haughey government with Ray McSharry as the Minister for Finance. And the first thing McSharry did, which earned him the nickname at the time of Mac the Knife. He took a knife to public spending, and the first thing he tried to do was bring the public finances back under control.
Yeah.
And as he did that, that gradually brought the inflation problem back under control again. But that there are many parallels, and I think the biggest mistake we can make at the moment, number one, is to try and chase inflation by spending. That risks making the situation worse. And the other thing, and this is not a popular view, and I'm sure I'll get lots of very negative commentary on social media and so on, but I think the trade unions need to be really responsible here, because if they start to chase this with significant wage demands, and I can fully understand the rationale, but if we adopt that approach, it could make the problem a hell of a lot worse. So I think careful management here is really important, but I don't see it happening, because the political complexion in the country at the moment is very firmly based on the money tree concept. You can basically, there is a money tree out there, you can spend as much money as you want to, there's no limit to that. And I think that is, and that is driving a very strong populist political agenda that's feeding across the system. And that really, really, in my view, is a serious risk that could ultimately result in serious problems for the economy.
The ability then of the Irish government to muck things up domestically when it comes to inflation, to what degree is that tempered now in 2022 when compared to the early 80s by the fact that, you know, interest rates are controlled at Brussels, the European Central Bank, that they'll be the ones to hike things up and try slow things down?
It's very different in terms of the whole monetary policy or interest rates. The equation is very different now. Back then we had semi-independent central bank, which was still heavily influenced by UK rates particularly, and German rates indeed, because we were members of the European monetary system. But this time around, I mean, it is clear that the European Central Bank is going to increase interest rates over the coming months, and it is likely to cause a recession in the Eurozone economy. And I think the more governments across Europe try to chase inflation problem through spending, I think the more aggressive the European Central Bank is likely to be. So I think, as happened during COVID, I think central banks and governments need to work together and pursue policies that are consistent with each other. So call at the moment for fiscal responsibility. And we see the summer economic statement a few weeks back suggesting there'd be 5.7 billion in spending increases in the budget and another billion in reduction in the taxation burden. That's a pretty expansionary way of responding. But I think what needs to happen, and probably not a popular view either, but I think the government needs to be careful about targeting financial assistance at those people who are most vulnerable and most exposed to the inflation we're seeing.
The line, I think, has just given up on us, but I think that the point was well made and well heard, whether people agree or not. Jim, a pleasure as always. Thanks a million for joining us. Jim Power, economist. John says, I'm starting to stock up on coal. In 2021, 20 kg bag was tenner, now €15.50. And the coal merchant says it will go higher. John, I heard of someone else today who's talking about filling the oil tank now ahead of winter because they expect if they wait until September, October to do it, it'll be an awful lot higher. Another John, this time in Westmeath, says the green energy policy all over Europe has a lot to answer for. And Paul says, have we any offshore oil of our own rather than looking at it? If yes, then why are we not getting it? I do remember Gavin McLaughlin, our own deputy business editor here a couple of weeks ago, actually, on that point, Paul, if memory serves me correctly. Barry Rowe, isn't that the Barry Rowe field? Is that the one the Providence Resources have been searching for oil in that part of the ocean? And it's an interesting one because the government have committed to issuing no new licenses to explore for fossil fuels. But even though this isn't operational yet, they have a license already, which means if they discover oil down there, they are perfectly entitled, even though it might seem like it's flying in the face of government policy. The license system as it currently stands in the law would suggest they're perfectly entitled to start pumping that oil out of the ground and selling it. Some people might have an objection to that based on carbon emissions and the damage to the climate. Others might welcome the cash injection. Ireland could become a petro state like Norway. Anyway, 53106.